MechCast, Sunday, January 17th, 2020. Hey, Mech Geeks, it's time for your MechCast, the show for Mech Geeks by Mech Geeks. I'm Adam, and this is a show where we discuss all things Macintosh. How you doing? Welcome back to the MechCast. Hope you are having a great, wonderful week. Everything going well for you. I am back here with you for another week of Apple Mac news, information, tips, tricks, all the fun stuff that we do here on the MechCast. And I have to say, there is a lot going on over the past week. Looking over the show notes, we have quite a few things to talk about. A lot in the Mac world. We're going to talk about Mac sales and how those have been going. We talked a little bit about that, I think, on the last episode. We've got even more information on Mac sales for the end of the year and for the last quarter. We're going to get into some Apple TV news, a bunch of new shows coming out, a lot of them with some big names behind them. So we'll dig into what those are. We've got rumors around iPad Pros, also Apple and iPhone stuff, new Macs in the pipeline, both in the notebook and desktop form factors. And we'll dig into all of those. And that'll kind of round out the news for this week. And then we have a bunch of feedback to get into. Gonna follow up a bit on some of the Big Sur feedback that I've been getting from you. I gave you some of my initial first thoughts and opinions. I'll add some information to that because now I've been using Big Sur for about a week or so. So, you know, I have a little bit of more opinion on it. Also, questions about using iMacs as displays, Apple TV, plus tip and a question about storing paperless documents and how we might go about doing that. And that'll round out this episode of the MechCast. Should be a good one. But before we get into everything, I do want to take a quick moment and thank a show sponsor, and that is CashFly. Huge fans of CashFly around here at the MechCast because you are hearing this show thanks to the good folks at CashFly. Without them, you would not have an episode. They help us get episodes out to you quickly and reliably, and they want to help you do that for your business as well. That's because when websites don't load, people lose interest. As a matter of fact, for every second a page takes to load, it costs a company about 16% in engagement. And always fewer visits means fewer customers. That's not good for your business. That's not really good for anyone. Not good for the customers either. But CashFly has your back with their web optimization capabilities. All of your content will be optimized before it's delivered to your visitors without requiring any development effort from you. With the recent addition of CashFly's flexible edge application platform and implementation services, their capabilities reach far beyond that of any traditional CDN. CashFly's web content optimization solution includes powerful APIs for solving your content distribution problems, on-the-fly next-generation image optimization, application load balancing, and smart asset delivery. Look, if your website is tied directly to your revenue, and you know that it is, you can optimize your site's content now. Guarantee the best experience for all your customers, no matter what devices they're using or where they are. The good people at CashFly are even going to provide a free optimization consultation just for listeners of this podcast. That's right, just for you. Know exactly where your site stands today with a Lighthouse score report and learn how CashFly's web optimization solution can add 60 points to your score instantly. Visit mac.cashfly.com. That's mac.cashefly.com. mac.cashfly.com to get that free web optimization Lighthouse score report and learn how CashFly can help you. And a big thank you to CashFly for their support of the podcast. Let's kick off things today, digging into Mac sales growth. In all of 2020, Apple did pretty well across the board, but Macs did very well, especially in the fourth quarter. Things are looking pretty positive. We've got a bunch of numbers from a bunch of different places, and they all seem to be saying the same thing in terms of Mac sales. IDC is out with their latest predictions in their worldwide quarterly personal computing device tracker. That's a big name for a report. Basically, it covers anything desktop or laptop or server. They have Apple shipping about 7.3 million Macs in the quarter. That's an increase of, get this, 49.2% from the same time last year, almost 50% higher than the same quarter last year. And that was enough to raise Apple's global market share, according to IDC, up from 6.8% in the fourth quarter last year to 8% in the fourth quarter of 2020. Looking at all of 2020, we have numbers from Canalys. Apple, they say Apple shipped 22.6 million units and increased their unit shipments over 16% from 2019. When they dig into Apple's fourth quarter numbers, those actually mimic IDC's quite nicely. They show Apple shipping almost 7.2 million Macs year over year, an increase, they say, of 45%. And then finally, we have numbers from Gartner. They came in a little bit lower, but not by much. They had Apple shipping about 6.9 million Macs for an annual increase year over year for the quarter of 31%. But they say that Apple captured an 8.7% market share, up from 7.3%. So they're showing the smallest increase in year-over-year Mac sales, but the larger increase in market share. But again, overall, these numbers looking very good for Mac. Overall, PC numbers were up a bit, which hasn't happened in a while, and Apple even did better than most. So good job, Apple. Numbers also look good on iPhones, especially in China. DigiTimes believes that iPhone shipments were up 10% in 2020. That's despite what they claim was an overall smartphone industry decline in 2020 of 8.8%. So Apple beating their competitors there. They're also reporting that Apple sold 18 million iPhone 12 units in China in the fourth quarter of 2020. And that was enough to give Apple over a 20% market share in China, which is very significant. And China being a pretty important market for Apple, it wasn't clear with the new iPhones, you know, how they were going to do. China can be a pretty price-sensitive market, and Apple having a new premium flagship phone, but looks like they did quite well. Overall, demand for Apple's 5G iPhones, the iPhone 12s, is really good, and there's rumors that because of that, Apple is going to be increasing production by up to 30% over last year in the first quarter of 2021, looking to produce about 96 million units. So Mac sales doing very well, iPhone sales doing very well. Things are looking quite nice for Apple as they move into 2021. Apple TV Plus is looking like they're getting a couple of new movies, and that those films have some pretty A-list actors. Apple's been seeming to do a pretty decent job of grabbing some of the top talent in Hollywood. This week, we're hearing from The Hollywood Reporter that Apple has secured a deal for a new sci-fi comedy drama from Adam Sandberg and Ben Stiller. Currently, the project is untitled, but it will be written by Andy Ciara, the writer of Palm Springs, and it's based on an original idea from Ralph Bob Waxberg, who some might know as the creator of BoJack Horseman. Apple also appears to have landed a new epic from Ridley Scott Films about Napoleon Bonaparte titled Kitbag. This is according to Deadline. Joaquin Phoenix is supposedly on board to play Napoleon, and the film is said to be an original and personal look at Napoleon's origins. Production on the film is set to start in early 2022 in the UK, so don't expect this anytime soon. But again, Apple landing, you know, a Ridley Scott film starring Joaquin Phoenix. I mean, that's pretty cool. Those two worked together on Gladiator, so look how that worked out. This one is about Napoleon. I think it could be pretty amazing, so I am looking forward to that. Just wish it was coming a little bit sooner. Deadline is also reporting that Apple has ordered a two-part biographical documentary focused on Oprah Winfrey. They say the project is being conceived by a team with close ties to Winfrey, Kevin MacDonald, and Lisa Earse-Palmer. They also did the Whitney Houston documentary, Whitney. Netflix may be looking to support AirPods spatial audio. This is according to a rumor from iPhoneSoft. They're citing an anonymous Netflix developer who claims that they've been testing spatial audio support on iPhone and iPad since December. No word exactly on when this feature will roll out to Netflix. 9to5Mac is citing an unnamed source who says that Apple is looking to bring their music and podcast apps to the Microsoft Store. The piece says they are currently testing the apps in a private beta. It's not clear if the apps will be for Windows PCs or just for Xbox consoles. You may remember back in November that Apple released a version of their Apple TV app for the Xbox One and the Xbox Series X and Series S. The apps also could be coming to the PC to replace the aging iTunes app, which Apple replaced on the Mac a couple years ago. If you remember, they got rid of iTunes and moved us to the music app, the podcast app, and the TV app. They likely want to be doing the same thing for Windows PCs, which still does have iTunes. 9to5Mac is also reporting that Apple is planning to once again extend the free Apple TV Plus trial subscriptions, this time until July of 2021. Apple had already extended the subscriptions that were due to expire in November of 2020 until the end of January. You probably remember that, especially if you're still on that free trial. Looking like now you're going to be able to stay on that until the end of July. The Apple TV Plus subscribers who had a subscription set to expire anywhere between January and June are set to gain the extended access at no cost. If you already pay $4.99, you will get or will continue to get that $4.99 a month credit. You should be getting an email about the extension in the next few months, according to the report, again, from 9to5Mac. We've been talking about rumors for a while now that Apple is working on updated versions of their iPad Pros. This week, we might have got a little look at what they might actually look like. Some allegedly leaked factory CAD images of Apple's next-gen iPad Pros surfaced on a couple of tech blogs this week. They pretty much support previous rumors, which claim that there will be little to no design changes. Yeah, surprise, they looked like iPad Pros. Overall, it appears that the thickness is exactly the same and that the width and height dimensions will be just slightly narrower, just by a hair. So a little bit narrower, a little bit shorter. And the only other thing of note was that the speaker grills also appear to be a little bit smaller. But the rest, the camera bump, everything else seems to be pretty much the same. We are expecting some internal updates, including revamped processors, probably moving to some variant of the A14 that's in the current iPhones. So it should be a nice little update for the iPad Pro. We'd also been hearing rumors that they could get mini LED displays, but that didn't come out in this latest round of leaks. So new iPads on the way, probably going to be happening sometime in the first half of this year, I would assume. Apple may be testing in-screen Touch ID, at least according to a report from Bloomberg. They say overall, Apple is not looking to change much in this year's iPhone update from the iPhone 12 models, but they are investigating an in-screen fingerprint reader. This, of course, is a rumor we've been hearing about again for a while, especially from sources like Ming-Chi Kuo, so it does seem to support that. It's not clear if Apple actually will get an in-screen reader in this year's iPhone lineup, but just that they are looking into it and are in various stages of testing. The report also goes on to mention the possibility of Apple discussing removing the charging port on at least some of this year's iPhone models. This is another rumor we've had for a while and something I think that is inevitable. The question becomes, is it something that Apple is going to do this year? I have a feeling that if they're going to do it, they would do it across the line. So this idea that they might just do it in some models and not others doesn't sit quite right with me, but apparently they are at least testing or looking at various models with and without charging ports, at least according to the Bloomberg report. In addition, Bloomberg also says that AirTags are set to be released this year, and it definitely feels like AirTags could be coming sooner rather than later. We are getting a lot of rumors heating up around Apple's item trackers, the rumored AirTags. And as a matter of fact, this week we also saw that if you have iOS 14.3 or later, you can actually get a glimpse at what item tracking might look like in the Find My app. That's because a Mac Rumors reader, David Chu, actually discovered that you can trigger the interface on iOS 14.3 or later by opening up Safari and typing in findmy:// items into the URL bar. Hit enter, it will pop up, it'll prompt you to open up the Find My app, and then when it does, it will open up the new items tab. Again, this is on devices running iOS 14.3 or later, or iPadOS 14.3 or later. I believe it also will work on macOS Big Sur, but I think the experience looks a little bit better on an iOS device. And what'll happen is it pops up and basically shows you the UI that we saw in leaked photos that came from betas of iOS 14 earlier this year. Pops up and it says, keep track of everyday items. It has the little icons with the backpack and different items in there. And then you can even start to search for devices that you can track. What's interesting about it to me is if you look at some of the language, the way it's written, it does feel like that it maybe will also be opened up to third-party trackers and maybe not just Apple's trackers. It just basically says, you know, find and track items. So I don't know if Apple's maybe trying to build the technology or work with folks to build the technology into future products. That would be something that could be pretty cool, but at least we do know, or we're pretty certain, that Apple is going to put out their own little trackers that you would be able to attach to your items, throw in your backpack, put on your keys, those sorts of things. And it's rumored to use Apple's U1 chip and ultra-wideband technology to help you locate devices within a really short range. So looking forward to seeing these things. We've been hearing about them for so long. It looks like they are somewhere on the horizon. We are expected to get them sometime in 2021. And as I say that, I realize it seems silly because we were also expected to maybe get them sometime in 2020. But looks like it's getting closer, especially when you can actually like pop open the interface in the current Find My app. We've been discussing on the MacCast also the rumored updated MacBook Pros. Well, this week, according to Ming-Chi Kuo, he reconfirms that rumor, but says that Apple is actually working on new Apple Silicon versions of the MacBook Pro 14-inch and 16-inch MacBooks, but that they are going to be, quote, significantly redesigned. He says that they will feature a new flat-edged design similar to the iPhone 12. Says no curves like the current models. Yeah, I'm looking at my MacBook Pro right now. I would hardly argue that this thing is curved. I mean, my wrists hurt sometimes from the sharp edge of the thing. It is so sharp. So I'm not really sure what Ming-Chi Kuo is talking about, but he's saying there's going to be a redesign and it's going to look like the iPhone 12. I always kind of felt like it already did look like that. Okay, I don't know. Maybe I'm missing something. He also claims that Apple is going to ditch the touch bar, something that many folks are probably going to be happy about, and return to the physical function keys. Interestingly, he also says that they're going to be bringing back MagSafe charging. Yeah, I know. I was wondering, how does that work, you know, now that they've switched to USB-C? But it looks like what's going on is they're just going to put back the old magnetic charging connector, that power connector, not wireless MagSafe like on the iPhone 12, actually going back to the original MagSafe with the same kind of port, at least according to rumors. Another thing he says is that they're also looking to bring back more ports, just more I/O, less dongles required, although unfortunately he didn't go into specifically which ports. So I don't know if that means SD card readers, HDMI ports, USB-A ports. We don't really know. We do know that Apple is going to stick with USB-C ports, and Ming-Chi Kuo did get some backup from Bloomberg's Mark Gurman, who said that, yes, there is going to be a slightly redesigned MacBook Pro. It is going to have MagSafe, and it's going to be just like the good old tried and true MagSafe, although he says it will allow for faster charging. He says, yes, it will still have USB-C ports. He also added that it will use a brighter, high-contrast panel for the display. He didn't go as far as saying that it would be a mini LED display, though. That's what we have been hearing, and that would produce a brighter, higher-contrast display. So maybe those two things play into each other, but he didn't say that. It will also, he was also a little less certain about the touch bar, simply noting that Apple has been testing versions with and without a touch bar, but he wasn't going so far as to say, yep, they're getting rid of the touch bar. And finally, Gurman also notes that there could possibly be a redesigned MacBook Air also coming, but he says that that would not be coming out until, quote, long after the release of the new MacBook Pros. And the new MacBook Pros are expected probably to come out sometime in the third quarter of this year. And then finally in the news for this week, because we know the notebooks aren't the only Macs that are going to be converting over to Apple Silicon, we're also hearing rumors about our desktop Macs. Bloomberg says that Apple is planning to release a fully redesigned iMac sometime later this year. Apple plans to replace and update both the 21.5 version and the 27-inch versions of the iMac. The report does not say what screen sizes the new versions will be, but we can assume probably Apple will stick with the 27-inch version. But we have had rumors previously that there could be a new 24-inch model that would potentially replace the 21.5-inch iMac. As far as what the redesign will look like, the report says it will have smaller bezels with a design very similar to Apple's Pro Display XDR, including even having a flat back and losing the iconic iMac chin. So you're not going to have that little area below the display. It will be probably edge to edge. Again, looking very much think like Apple Pro Display XDR. Not an XDR display, but a very nice clean look for an updated iMac. And it should be pretty dramatic, I would imagine. The piece also says that Apple is planning on a new lower cost display. It is reportedly in early development, but would be created to serve as a replacement for the $999 Apple Thunderbolt display that Apple discontinued back in 2016. Unfortunately, on this one, there's no timeline, because I know there is a ton of folks in our community who really want an Apple display back, something that's affordable and not $6,000. So Apple is working on it, but it seems unlikely that it would get released this year. So you might have to wait until 2022. Maybe we'll get lucky and it'll come right before the end of the year, maybe in time for the holidays. That would be a nice Christmas present for a bunch of people. Apple also is supposedly working on two new versions of the Mac Pro. One would be a full-sized version. The other one would be a less-than-half-size version. I'm going to call that one the Mac Pro Mini. So that Mac Pro Mini would be pretty small. The report said kind of reminiscent of actually the G4 Cube. So think G4 Cube-sized little Mac Pro running Apple Silicon. Yeah, that could be pretty cool. As far as the full-size version goes, it does say, the reports do say that Apple is possibly looking to stick with Intel on that one, and that the Apple Silicon Mac Pro would be limited to that Mac Pro Mini. And I think that kind of makes sense as well. Apple really likes those Xeon processors, and Intel has done pretty good with those. Pros really seem to like them as well. And probably on the pro side, software could be potentially a little bit more of an issue. So yeah, they're probably going to want to have options over on that side. But I would hope that the Mini Mac Pro or the Mac Pro Mini would be more in the price range of the previous Mac Pro. So somewhere in that US $3,000 to $6,000 range, moving up to, but just under where the current Mac Pro starts at $6,000 and up. So I think that could be a pretty exciting product and would fulfill the needs of many folks who want a pro level desktop and want something with a little more maybe expansion and kick, although with that mini size, who knows how much expansion you'll have in there, but something a little bit above, say, Mac Mini. But I mean, the Mac Mini also is a great machine, and you really can push that, as we've talked about in this show, up to kind of pro levels, especially if you throw in an eGPU and that sort of thing, and especially with the new M1 systems, if they can ever get an eGPU in there. But Apple's going to have an interesting desktop lineup coming in the next year or two as they make this transition to Apple Silicon. I am super bullish about Apple Silicon. It is getting rave reviews. I've been looking into it a lot further, trying to kind of understand the technology, understanding where ARM came from. And one thing that got pointed out to me, which is a little bit interesting, and I knew this, but it just didn't come to the front of my mind when I thought about Apple moving to Apple Silicon. We've come full circle with processors and the Mac. The IBM PowerPC was a RISC-based processor. Intel processors are CISC-based processors. We've been on those for a while. We made the transition to that. And guess what? Moving back to ARM, we're moving back to RISC. And it's performing incredibly well. It's showing all the power and promise that I think we were promised back in the PowerPC days, but that IBM was sort of never able to deliver. So it's just interesting how history goes and it repeats itself and everything comes full circle. And it's kind of another example of it. I know it's not that simplistic, but it's kind of fun to think about nonetheless. But hey, with that, that is the news for this week. Before we move on, I do want to take a moment and thank another show sponsor, and that is Headspace. So you may have tried meditation before and it didn't work, right? Or maybe you felt like you were doing it wrong. If mental health is part of your self-care plan for this year, you owe it to yourself to try Headspace. Headspace is your daily dose of mindfulness in the form of guided meditation in an easy-to-use app. Headspace is one of the only meditation apps advancing the field of mindfulness and meditation through clinically validated research. So, whatever the situation, Headspace really can help you feel better. Overwhelmed? Headspace has a 3-minute SOS meditation for you. Need some help falling asleep? Headspace has wind-down sessions their members swear by. And for parents, Headspace even has morning meditations you can do with your kids. Headspace's approach to mindfulness can reduce stress, improve sleep, boost focus, and increase your overall sense of well-being. I personally am completely new to meditation, and I had no idea what to do or really how to get started, and Headspace really helped. I've been using Headspace's basics courses, doing 3-minute daily lessons, working on focus, and they've really made it easy to get started. It's been really helping me. After each session, I feel relaxed and ready to focus on my tasks. I also love the fact that they have integration with the health app and health kit so I can track my progress. Plus, I get great notifications to help keep me on track and keep me meditating. Headspace is backed by 25 published studies on its benefits, 600,000 five-star reviews, and over 60 million downloads. Headspace makes it easy for you to build a life-changing meditation practice with mindfulness that works for you on your schedule, anytime, anywhere. You deserve to feel happier, and Headspace is meditation made simple. Go to headspace.com/Maccast. That's Headspace, H-E-A-D, SPACE.com/MacCast for a free 1 month trial with access to Headspace's full library of meditations for every situation. This is the best deal being offered right now. Go to headspace.com/MacCast today. And a big thank you to Headspace for their support of the MacCast. May remember last week I told you I had finally made the leap to Big Sur. I did an over-the-top upgrade, so that went very, very smoothly for me. I had kind of no issues, and I probably didn't comment on that, but I probably should have, because it was a very smooth upgrade process. Although, like I said in that show, the visual update was a little bit jarring. I don't think I was very ready for it. Even though I had seen the screenshots, I kind of knew what Apple was doing. It turned out to be quite a big change for me. Now, a week later, I'm getting a little more used to it, like I thought. There's still some little minor annoyances in terms of the UI, but overall, I'm enjoying a lot of the new features. I like the control center. I like the widgets. I like all that kind of stuff. Not a lot of big changes across the board, I would say, but a lot of nice little enhancements. I'm not so sure how, again, I feel about some of the iOSification, I guess, the rounded icons, the kind of light icons in the Finder, the outlines, the different color palettes, those sorts of things, all the transparency. Really, the new modals are still pretty freaky to me. I don't know. Like when they pop up, they look more like just like little info windows and not really like modals. So it's taking a little bit of getting used to, but I'll get there. But regardless, I threw it out to the community. I said, hey, what are your thoughts on Big Sur? What are you liking? What are you not liking? What have you run into? And this week I got some feedback from John. So here's what he had to say.
Hey, Adam, this is John Krikorian, host of the Trek Profiles podcast. And you had asked for a little bit of feedback on our Big Sur experiences. And for me, it has been pretty much a disaster. I'm sorry I did it. And I wish I had waited until the next iteration. I've ran into two problems that have really affected some key workflows that I have. One is a really simple one in that I used to export my podcast art from Illustrator, and then I would resize it and lower the quality in Preview. And it turns out that in Big Sur, the quality slider in Preview is completely broken and doesn't work. So not that it's a big deal, but I just had to go back and do it all in Illustrator, which I find a lot more complicated and more trouble than it's worth. It used to be so simple to do in Preview. So I did file a bug with Apple on that one. Another problem I have is that I am involved in a social organization, and we do a lot of SMS texts to group members. And so in Notes, I had a whole slew of different groups of phone numbers, basically, as just text in Notes. So it was just a list of phone numbers. And I used to be able to copy those from Notes right into Messages, paste them in, and it would automatically know who all it was going to, and then I could just type my message. But now in Big Sur, when I copy out of Notes all the phone numbers and paste it into Messages, it just figures out the first phone number and drops the rest. And this has broken a workflow, which I had actually been using on my Mac for many years. And that was really frustrating. And I haven't found a good workaround for that. But strangely enough, it works on my tablet or on my phone. It just doesn't work on the computer. So these two things are not all that big in the grand scheme of things, but really, really annoying. And I hope they get fixed. Anyway, that's my feedback. And I hope that helps. Keep up the MacCast and have a great day and a happy new year. Bye.
Hey, John, sorry to hear that about Big Sur not being ideal for you or causing you a little bit of headache. You know, again, oftentimes it feels like, yeah, these aren't really big things, but when you have a tried and true workflow and a software update messes with that, you know, that can be infinitely frustrating, right? And you can really wish or regret that you did the upgrade because everything was working along just fine. And now things are messed up and you're having to do workarounds and you're having to come up with fixes and stuff like that until maybe the bugs or issues get addressed. On the messages one, I was trying to figure out a way that you might be able to work around that. And I did a little bit of playing around. And I thought, you know, what might be a perfect solution for this? And yes, they're a MacCast sponsor, but this is like exactly the kind of thing that you might, you know, want to use this for is Text Expander. You know, you can use Text Expander, set up a little snippet. So I'm thinking, hey, instead of copying and pasting it from a notes document or a text document, why not just have Text Expander actually type it in for you? So I tried it out. I made a comma-separated list of a bunch of phone numbers and tried using a text expander snippet to expand that inside messages, and lo and behold, I got the same result as you did. It basically, it only entered the first number, and all the other numbers just disappeared. And so then I got to thinking, well, maybe the bug has to do with the separator. So I tried different separators other than commas. I tried spaces. I tried putting just tabs in there with the, you know, hitting tab on my keyboard. I tried pipes. I tried semicolons, you know, anything I could possibly think of to see if the bug was related to some sort of separator character. And no, it had the same result every single time. It would just give me the first number and nothing else. And then I remembered, you know what? Text Expander actually lets you put in control characters like returns, like tabs, those sorts of things. And so I rebuilt that snippet with the phone numbers, but then used either a enter or tab character inserted by Text Expander. And sure enough, when I did that, it worked perfectly. So I don't know if you're a Text Expander user, but this might be the workaround for you. In the meantime, again, they are a Metcalf sponsor, but it's because they make great stuff. And, you know, it can do things like this. You can really script things. You can really do a lot with Text Expander that just basically mimics actual typing. So maybe that's a solution for you. I don't know, but it was one that I came up with. So I thought I would share that with you. And again, thank you for sharing your experience with your Big Sur upgrade. And if you have an experience with Big Sur, again, positive, negative, I'd love to hear some folks who are really just enjoying it and liking it, especially if you have a particular feature that you're really enjoying. Send those emails and audio comments in, maccast@gmail.com. I'd love to share those with our community. Another thing that came up this week is a question that I think comes up every couple months or so. I think this one kind of comes around, and I always feel a little bit bad because I don't really ever have a good answer for it, a good solution. And this time around, I received an email from Pierre, and he works from home, has for a while, and has a locked down laptop that was provided by his work. And he also has his own personal iMac at home. And what he's been wanting to do is use that iMac, that big, gorgeous iMac display, as a display for that work laptop. Right now, the solution that he's been able to use is the HDMI port on the laptop going to an Elgato USB video capture device. But he notes that the refresh rate and the resolution on that, it's less than ideal. It leaves kind of a lot to be desired. So it's a little bit of a clunky workaround. And so the question is there a way that he can get better resolution, that he can actually use that laptop with the iMac as a display? And actually, it really kind of depends, Pierre. I don't know which, you didn't mention in his email which version of the iMac he has, but if you have a pre-2014 iMac, which at this stage of the game, you know, it is 2021, that's a little bit long in the tooth. If you have a pre-2014 iMac, there was a feature that Apple had called Target Display Mode that you could actually use it. You could use the iMac as a Thunderbolt display if you have a Thunderbolt device or a Thunderbolt Mac to plug into it. Or if it's a 2009 or 2010 iMac, you could use that using Mini DisplayPort or Thunderbolt. So either of those connections. So there was a keyboard shortcut you could use at boot up, and it would put it into Target Display Mode, and it would operate as a display, as a Thunderbolt display or a Mini DisplayPort display, depending upon the model. More recent models, the Retina iMacs, those ones with those big, gorgeous screens, yeah, they don't support that feature anymore. So you can't do that. And I don't know if there's a technical reason why. I've never really looked into it. If you happen to know that and want to share that information with us, send us an email. I might do a little more research and maybe follow up on the next episode of the MacCast to figure out, you know, why that isn't supported. Because this question, like I said, comes up a lot. And I have to imagine that Apple gets a lot of requests for this. People wanting to use an iMac as a display, and I don't know why it wouldn't be really possible. So Pierre was asking for, you know, other options, other workarounds. The only one that I could really think of, and I don't know that it really is going to give you a better refresh rate or display resolution, but you could potentially try it, is you could try AirPlay mirroring. And to do that, you need, I think, an app like Reflector. I'll have a link to it in the show notes at maccast.com, but basically it's a little app that allows you to turn your Mac display into an AirPort display receiver. So natively in the operating system, you can AirPlay mirror your Mac display to, say, like an Apple TV or to some other AirPlay device, but it doesn't typically act as a receiver. And basically what this software does, is it allows your Mac to act as a receiver. I typically use it for doing presentations. When I'm doing a presentation and I want to show my iPhone screen or my iPad screen, especially in the days before we had Apple TVs that we could actually AirPlay to. Now I generally just bring an Apple TV and plug that into the projector and use it that way. But this let you do it through your Mac. And it would also let you do Mac to Mac. It also supports Google Cast and Miracast. So again, I don't know if that work laptop is a Mac laptop or a PC laptop, but you might be able to do Google Cast and just, you know, AirPlay it basically to your Mac, AirPlay mirror the display. And so maybe that's an option for you. The only other thing I could think of is getting a higher quality video capture device, but even that's a little bit kludgy, right? Because you're basically having to open up, I would assume, your video capture software, put it in full screen mode, and then basically just you're not capturing, you're just like mirroring that content to your display. But I guess you could get something higher quality than a USB capture device. You could go with like a Thunderbolt 3 video capture device, but those things, they do come in like HD and 4K versions, but they tend to be pretty expensive. So I don't know that that's really a viable solution. You know, beyond just, you can probably get a pretty decent display for pretty cheap, but I know you specifically said in your email you're not really interested in buying another display to put on your desk. And I can totally understand that as someone who's now working from home and I have a work machine that happens to be a 21.5-inch iMac, and I have to tear it down and reset up my Mac computer because I only have a single space to work in too. And I have a second monitor, and luckily I can connect both machines to that. So I just swap it back and forth, but it does become kind of a pain. So it'd be nice to not have to like tear down a whole iMac and then put up a display and go back and forth. I get where you're coming from, believe me on this, but I just don't know that I have a really great solution for you. There's the couple I shared with you, the couple of things that I can think of. Maybe someone in the community has some sort of magic bullet for this, some sort of magic trick, magic device, little black box. I don't really know that I don't know about, but if they do, if you do rather, send it to me, send me an email, send me an audio comment, and we'll see if we can't solve this question once and for all. But unfortunately, I think at the end of the day, the answer might be there really isn't a great answer. And I hate to tell you that, Pierre, but thanks for your email anyway. All right, Jeff wrote in to comment. We've been having some back and forth on Apple Fitness Plus, and he wrote a little email. I did my review. I've been using it a little bit, although I need to use it a lot more. I think it's actually pretty good. If you haven't checked it out, I think it's worth checking it out. But Jeff wrote in, he has been using Fitness Plus on his Apple TV, and he noticed something that is pretty frustrating, and I have to agree with this. I've seen this before, but basically, if you go in, you can kind of browse through the workouts, and they're organized really well. You have great ways you can search for them. You can kind of search by the workout you want to do, the length of the workout, the kind of music you want in your workout. It's really great, and then you can go in, and you can kind of click, and you can like see a little, you know, the intro screen for the workout, and it has the button to start the workout and to get more information. And it has, you know, if you scroll down, you can get all the music and the playlists that are in there. You can see other related workouts. And within the workout, there actually is a little description of what's in the workout. Unfortunately, if you look on the Apple TV, the description text is cut off, or it actually kind of scrolls off the screen. Unfortunately, as Jeff pointed out, and I can confirm and tell you, there's actually no way to select that content or to scroll to actually read the full text description. You like literally can't do it. So it's just like a really bad UI. And I've seen this with the movies app as well, or just movies in Apple TV or iTunes Movie Store. If you go in there, you can get, you know, all the details about the movie, and there's a little text description at the top, and it's typically cut off. Now, the difference is with movies, if you actually scroll down the page, so you kind of get past the where to buy and the previews and the cast and crew, and you scroll down even further, there actually is a little about section, and the first little box in that about section has the description with the word more, and you can actually click on that box, and then it opens up in full screen, and then you can read the full synopsis of the movie or the full preview, the full description. That is not the case, apparently, with Fitness Plus, and it's looking like it's just something Apple didn't think about or they missed or something like that. I'm sure the person who wrote all that lovely text, the marketing person, is really thrilled that it just gets cut off and no one can read it. And maybe no one's reading it anyway. But the point is, as Jeff pointed out, it is a little bit frustrating and there doesn't seem to be a way to do it unless I am completely missing some other trick. Is it just bad UI or is there actually a trick? My Google foo failed me because I Googled for this for quite a bit more time than I probably am willing to admit. So here's the point where I turn to you, the MacCast community, and I say, what is the trick? What are we missing here? Maybe we're not missing anything. I don't think we are, but hey, if you know, shoot me an email, maccast@gmail.com. All right, the last thing that I have for you today is another email from Mike. He wrote in, he's been doing some kind of paperless stuff with his documents, pay stubs, credit card statements, banking statements. He's putting all of those, you know, digitizing those, I'm assuming with some sort of scanning app, maybe on his iPhone, maybe, you know, a scanner. But he's been taking that stuff. He has been pushing it into Evernote and storing it that way, syncing it through the cloud. But he wrote in to say, hey, I'm not sure I really trust Evernote anymore. I'm looking to do something different. The problem is I'm having trouble replicating the ease of use, the experience that I had with Evernote. Basically, he said with Evernote, what he was able to do is just take those documents, drop them right into Evernote using either the browser plugin or by simply right-clicking on the document in the Finder and sending it to Evernote, and then it would sync. And he tried switching over to the Apple Notes app, but it's not that seamless, right? You have to kind of open up Notes. You got to like place the documents in there. You can, of course, scan them right into the Notes app using the scanner that's built in there. But, you know, the syncing's kind of kludgy. And then at the end of the day, you just kind of have notes. You don't really have kind of a document organization. And he said, you know, Mike said, hey, I really like having this kind of app to manage these things. I get that I could put it in folders in iCloud Drive, but I really prefer to kind of have a single app that helps me manage these files, manage these documents. And so that's what he's looking for, a kind of replacement for Evernote. Mike, I can tell you, you know, I've been paperless for a while. The app that I use that I really, really love is Paperless from Mariner Software. I'll have a link to it in the show notes at maccast.com. I've been using it for years. It's available on the Mac or Windows. The way that it won't work for you, though, unfortunately, is it doesn't really sync with the cloud. It's really meant to be kind of a local application. What I like about it in terms of managing the files is it has great indexing, you know, OCR for the documents, so they're all searchable. It will actually find data. It makes data entry really easy. You can actually categorize things, whether they're documents or receipts or whatever they might be. And it has a kind of structure a lot like photos or music, where it has its own library file. So it's not actually part of the Finder. Everything is in its own single library file, and all the documents are stored in there. And some people don't like that. I actually do like that because I have a single file. What I do for security is I put that on an encrypted disk image that I keep on my in my documents folder. So then that gets synced to iCloud. It gets backed up with all of my backups, both locally and my Backblaze backup, but it's fully encrypted because I put it in that encrypted disk image. So I know those documents are secure because a lot of those, you know, bank statements and tax forms and all those sorts of things have a lot of sensitive data that I wouldn't want to get out anywhere. So that's how I kind of protect it. So that's another thing to think about, you know, like when you're just using a service like a Dropbox or a Box or an Evernote, you know, is that stuff getting encrypted and secured? Likely not. So you want to make sure all that stuff is protected. So I'm not sure that paperless will work for you, but you could take a look at it, maybe give it a try. Another option, though, could be the app KeepIt. This is from Reinvented Software. I'm a big fan of Reinvented. Steve Harris is the developer over there. Amazing guy. He does a really great job. I don't use KeepIt myself, but I do use his app Feeder to do the RSS feed for my podcast. I have for years, and I absolutely love that app. Recently updated it, so just got the new version working with Big Sur, and it's awesome. But KeepIt, I think, might be the thing that would work for you because it allows you to store notes, web links, documents, images, basically any kind of file, and it has both a Mac app and an iOS app. It offers syncing through iCloud. It stores everything as files and folders and tags in the Finder, so they're all right there, but you access everything and manage it all through the KeepIt app. So it sounds like a lot like what you're doing with Evernote. I don't know if you can just right-click and send things into KeepIt, but it sounds like you probably could just drop them in through the Finder and then use the app for managing all of them. So I think this is the kind of app that you're looking for. KeepIt's not the only one. There's a couple other document managers out there. DevonThink is another great one. Also Yojimbo from Barebone Software. So there are some options on the Mac, and maybe that's going to get you closer to where Evernote was. They're not just notes apps per se. They kind of have all of those features, and you might check any one of those out. And again, I'll have links to all of these in the show notes at mattcast.com. So I would check out some of those, see if that doesn't solve your solution. Again, also, I'm going to turn it over to you in the community. You've heard what Mike is kind of looking for. If you have something or some sort of system that you're using that you would like to share with us, we'd love to hear about it. Shoot me an email, send me an audio comment, maccast@gmail.com. But with that, that is going to do it for this episode of the MacCast. Before I leave you, I do want to take a quick moment and thank my show sponsor, Smile, makers of Text Expander, PDF Pen, also Text Expander for iPhone and iPad, and PDF Pen for iOS. You can get more information and details on all their great software by visiting smilesoftware.com/podcast. Bandwidth for the MacCast is provided by CacheFly. You can find them at CacheFly.com. And all advertising on the MacCast is handled by Backbeat Media. They are at backbeatmedia.com. As always, I love hearing from you. If you have a comment, a question, something you'd like to hear covered on a future episode of the MacCast, you can send your emails and audio comments to maccast@gmail.com. You're also welcome to call in on the listener hotline. That phone number, 281-622-4269, 281-MAC-IM-9. You can leave a voicemail there. And if you need show notes, links to anything that I talked about on this or any other episode of the MacCast, you can find those on the website. That's at maccast.com. And finally, if you want to follow me on social media, you can find me on Twitter, twitter.com/maccast. You can check out the MacCast Facebook page over at facebook.com/themaccast, or find me on Instagram, just MacCast on Instagram. But that is going to do it for now. Until next time, I will talk to you all again real soon.